Do you need a guidebook for life? I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is my instruction manual. In this episode, we talk to Kurik Ashley, Hollywood actor turned motivational speaker, and author of the book, How Would Love Respond?
Don't ask for tragedy so that you make your life better. Just ask to make your life better.
We meet our regular fitness contributor, Kathleen Trotter.
I don't want anybody to be whole new them. I just want you to be a version of you that's fitter, happier, healthier, more active.
This is episode 2. It took me a life-changing event to realize I needed to change my life. If I'm honest, it took me a few. First, my second son was born with a rare genetic condition which makes it hard for him to walk and talk. As a parent, this was devastating. A few years later, I lost my dad to cancer. And then a year ago, I learned that my kidneys were failing. But I got a second chance at life when my little sister agreed to donate one of her kidneys to me. This week's featured guest has gone through his share of life-changing events. Kurik Ashley has been homeless, he's been suicidal, he's been a cocaine addict, he's also been a Hollywood actor, and for nearly 3 decades he's coached athletes, actors, and CEOs helping thousands of people to improve their lives. Kurik is author of How Would Love Respond? Imagine if you were given a gift so powerful that you knew you had to share it with the world. Kurik, thanks for joining us.
Wow, Keith, what an introduction. And I'm really honored. And welcome to the other side of the world. We're talking for, I'm in Australia right now. So technology is amazing.
Our first guest from Australia. So it's great to talk to you. So I gave a brief bio of you in your introduction there, but what did I miss? What's the most important thing about Kurik's identity that never shows up in your bio?
Well, I would say is that, you know, the Hollywood stories are all great and, you know, all those things. But, you know, the biggest thing for me, I think the most successful thing I will ever do in my life is my beautiful wife and kids. My mom was dying of cancer, about 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago now. And, I was with her in Chicago those last 10 days. And then that very last day, she was unconscious and weak and couldn't, you know, stay awake. And then I'm in the emergency room holding her hand, and she opens her eyes after hours and hours of being unconscious and just looks at me and says, "Have babies." And I said, "Mom, now, now, like, you got to bother me about this again." And she said, "You know, Kurik, with all your brothers and sister, you know, they have kids, and, but I've always wanted to see yours because she got this magical, crazy energy of yours. And I just want to see what your kids would be like." And I said, "All right, you know, Mom, this time in the hospital with you, has actually made me ready for the first time. And, you know, I promised to have them, but you got to stay around to see them." And she said, "Don't piss me off. Just have them." And I'm like, all right, get it. And, I promised, and I said, "I love you." And she closed her eyes, and that was game over for her. Those were her last words. And came home, and 2 weeks later, got my son's mom pregnant. And, that's my son. He's now, just about turning 6. And, and now I'm remarried and have 2 beautiful daughters that came along with the marriage. And, you know, it is the most transformational thing ever. I mean, I'm a late bloomer.
Isn't it?
It took me 50 years to get ready to have kids, but it's a game changer. And so, you know, it's one of those things that has made me evolve as a human being probably more than any other event.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's one of those things where having to look after someone else and having someone else that depends on you so much really helps you to grow, I think, in a way that many other experiences don't.
Yes, and I work on seeing life through their eyes instead of trying to force them to see it through mine, because they'll live my time, you know, but to see it wide-eyed and innocent and exciting and everything that they do and creative and imaginative.
So I've talked about some of your life-changing experiences in the introduction, and having kids can be another one. But I want to ask you about what may have been the biggest one in your life, the one that you start your book with. So nearly 30 years ago, you were in the Philippines filming Delta Force 2, and we're almost part of a terrible tragedy, and certainly in the middle of it. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was 1989, and I had just finished the movie Lockup with Sylvester Stallone, and now I was on my way to the Philippines to go do Delta Force 2 with Chuck Norris. So as a young guy, 27 years old, you know, actor in Hollywood, you know, I'm living the high life now. I'm working with two of my idols and, you know, big budget movies and all those things, and my career starting to get some real consistency to it. And not only have I worked on 38 movies in front of the camera, but I've also done over 500 movies behind the camera as a key and dolly grip. I worked in special effects and production, and I was the assistant to a director for 13 years. And so when I got to the Philippines, some of my best friends were actually on the crew. Mike Graham, the key grip, Don Marshall, the lighting director, Jeff Brewer, one of the stunt guys. And so it was just awesome, and we were having a great time. And you know, here I get to be a commando, a Delta Force team, where I got a jumpsuit on and the beret and machine guns and helicopter and the M60 and all that stuff. And, you know, and they pay me for this on top of it.
Yeah. And they gave you danger pay too every time you went up in the helicopter.
Yeah, an extra $400. So, yeah. You know, I was just doing 20 flights a day and ringing it up and having a great time. I mean, don't tell them that I would have done it for free. I was having such a good time, but, it was a Friday, and we were, had a big week of shooting, and now this is literally the last sequence that we have to film that day before we can go, party in Manila and have a weekend off. And, you know, and by the way, you know, Chuck is like one of the most amazing guys. He'll buy you a beer and hang out with
right?
stuff. And when you have a beer with Chuck Norris, you kind of pray that a bar fight will break out. You just want to see this guy in action. So we're in a helicopter. We're on this palatial mansion grounds that one side of the property goes off a couple thousand feet down to an extinct volcano crater. And there's a resort down there and a lake and everything. It's just stunning. You know, you can't believe you're on the rim of a volcano crater. And then the other side is bluffs and jungles and monkeys and everything. It was really, you know, for a kid from Chicago, this place was amazing. And all we had to do was go up 15 feet and shoot two lines of dialogue and then come back down. It was done. I had already done hairy stunts in the helicopter that day, so this was a piece of cake. And as the chopper got up about 15 feet off the ground, I noticed the cameraman had shifted the camera a little bit to get a shot, and I also realized that I probably wasn't being photographed anymore. And I asked him, and he said, "No, you're out of frame." So I just figured I'd make room for everybody else. And I guess the perplexing part of the story is that I could have made $400 even for that flight.
Yeah.
But I was like, I got 10 more weeks. No big deal. You know, it stepped off the helicopter. The other door gunner stepped out. And then the chopper went up 15 feet. They shut out the dialogue. The chopper drifted out over the edge of the mountain. It had a compressor stall, which means the engine shut off. And it now plummeted down the side of the mountain bluff. And I was running for the road. Chopper's going down. And as I came around that first bend, I could hear the impact of the chopper hitting the road about 1,000 feet down. And as I got to it, it had nosedived, and all the blades had sheared off. And anyways, over the next an hour or so, you know, we're pulling bodies out. And my best friend Mike, I pulled him out of the burning helicopter because it actually burst into flames, and it was getting him out. And Mike, at 29 years old, died in my arms on the way to the hospital. And then I lost five of my friends that day. It was a really rough day at work. Jeff Brewer, the stunt guy, his son had just turned 2 years old 2 days before the crash. So it was...
And he was one of the ones who died as well.
Yeah, he died. And you know, it's one of those things where it's life. It's not fair. It never has been fair. It never will be fair. Life doesn't really turn out the way it should. It turns out the way that it does. And now it really comes down to what do you do with it that creates the life that you get. For me, it went to the dark side for 2.5 years, where that's where I became a cocaine addict and was pumping 5 grams of cocaine up my nose every night. I had a 357 Smith & Wesson pistol in my mouth with the hammer pulled back and my finger on a trigger. I was smoking dope and drinking booze and cigarettes. I mean, I wasn't partying. I was just trying to kill myself and, you know,
right.
get that weakness to finally pull the trigger. But luckily, I'm not a success at everything in life. And, one day I woke up and decided it's time to change. And my life has been a testament to that moment of decision.
One of the things that I like to tell people is that they shouldn't wait for a life-changing event to change their lives. But it seems that so often people that do go through these traumatic experiences, even if it takes 2.5 years, as it did in your case, so many people do have these events that make them realize, that make them wake up in a new way and realize that they really should make changes in their own lives, and often to kind of carry that message to others like you've done.
Yes, Keith. Well, that's because you got to remember is those stories that you hear from people like myself who, I work in 17 countries and do thousands of presentations. Well, we survived. And we came out the other side, but there's a lot of people that the cocaine actually killed them or ruined their life so bad they never come back, or the gun did go off. And so I always tell people is don't go there, use other people's stories, find their pain, to make the transformation. Your life doesn't have to be in a toilet to make it better. The easiest way to do that, Keith, is really, imagine your life where you kind of just wasted it away and you didn't go for your goals and dreams, and you think about yourself, near your time of passing, and you look back and you feel all that regret and all that pain. That's called future pacing, where you look back and you go, man, that sucked. I hated it. So that you use that perceived pain to make the transformation. And that's way more powerful. By the way, I still do that. I try not to get myself in more catastrophes in order to find inspiration. And I didn't ask for the helicopter crash either. It happened to be there. But I hear your story about your son and everything that you go through. And I was working with the CEO of a very large international company who they were at a basketball game in Indiana, and his 2-year-old was leaving his lap to walk over to his mom, who was a couple feet away, and fell through the leg hole of the bleachers to his death.
Oh,
I can't imagine losing my children, And so we all have our stuff, but, it's not about what happens. It's about what do you do with what happens. And don't ask for tragedy so that you make your life better. Just ask to make your life better, which is what I do every day. I ask, how can I make this better? And what's great about this? No matter what you go through in life, because it changes your focus. And when you change your focus, you're going to change the way you feel, and then obviously what you do with that.
And a big part of you diverting that energy for positivity was writing the book. Can you tell us about the title, How Would Love Respond? What does that mean?
Thank you for asking, because the title actually wrote the book for me. I was doing a coaching with one of my clients. Somewhere in that coaching, I said, about, imagine if you identified yourself as love, because the most powerful two words in the English language are I am, because whatever follows those words is your identity. It's who you say you are, and it's who we say we are that determines our beliefs. It determines our behaviors, how we act, and therefore our results. And so I said, imagine if you identified yourself as love. How would you respond differently in life? Would you allow yourself to stay poor? Would you, smoke cigarettes? Would you abuse drugs or alcohol? Would you rip somebody else off in business? Of course not. That's not how love would respond. And so for me, the question became the title. And then I had to figure out is how do I get people to not only understand the question, but to create the leverage in them to use it, because it's a game changer. And it is for everything in life is how I operate with people, how I help people, because that's how love would respond. But it also doesn't mean is that we become victims to help other people. That doesn't make any sense. Is love would want you to have everything and help everybody else have everything. Yet if we don't have it, well, how are we going to give it away to somebody else? So that's how love would respond. And love is the most powerful force in the universe. The Bible, I'm not a religious person. My mom was Jewish. My dad was Christian. I was just really confused. But the Bible says if you do not know love, you do not know God, because God is love. And watching my son's mom give birth to my son, I saw a head the size of a cantaloupe come out of a part of her body that used to be the size of an eye socket. That had to hurt. And 16 hours of this going on, man, if that came out of my backside, I would never eat solid food again. And I'd probably hate the kid for the rest of my life. But the moment that baby comes out and the mom makes eye contact with the baby, She goes from unbelievable amounts of pain to unconditional love in the fraction of a millisecond. And so our moms taught us the most valuable lesson right up front, which is transformation. The part of the word Asian, A-T-I-O-N, means the experience of. Trans means to go beyond, and form is what you have right now. So it's the experience to go beyond what you have right now. And our moms taught us that you can go from one of the most painful moments of your life to the most powerful in a millisecond. And that's why our moms taught us that lesson right from the beginning.
Let me ask you about the subtitle as well. You talk about the gift that you were given. What is that?
Well, as you'll read the book, Keith, is that after the helicopter wreck, my friend Mike decided to hang around even after his passing for the next 2 years. And I wasn't the only person seeing him, but I was certainly the person seeing the most and having conversations with them. And I know it sounds kind of weird when you hear this out of context, but I guess you'll have to read the book to understand it all.
And it's one of those things that when I was reading it, it's so hard to believe, but I also want to believe it.
Well, I will tell you, Keith, that it's my book that has given so many other people permission within themselves to have their own experiences that they've had, which are similar. A lot of what I've described, you know, about parts of it are identical to their stories and those things. If people don't believe me, that's okay by me. I mean, I know what I went through, so I think I wrote it more for just getting it out of me than trying to convince people that it's real or not. But it is what it is. But one of the things that happened was is that I had to learn how to do an out-of-body experience and escort my friend through the tunnel into the light. And I was warned not to go into the light myself because it wasn't my time for passing. But as I hugged him and backed him kind of into the light, and he kind of became these brilliant bits of light and started particleizing on me, I was given a gift, a message to carry with me and to bring back. And the message is that, it's all this life, it's all borrowed. You don't get to take anything with you except for the love that you give, the love that you receive, and the experiences that your soul gets to have. And so that kind of goes back to what the purpose of life is, which is to enjoy your life, because when you really love all the things that you're doing and all your experiences and the people in your life and your family, you get to bring it all with you, not the physical form of it, but the essence of it. And so it's about loving it all. And that's really the gift. And I carry that with me, and I bestow that upon everybody, how I treat them and everything I do in life.
In the book, you talk about the two biggest lies that we're told. And the number one lie is that adults should give up on their dreams. You say we shouldn't. But the second is the one I want to ask you about. You say the second biggest lie that we're told is that if we want to be successful, we need to work hard. Why is that not true?
Well, you know, my father was, you know, I'm my father's only child. My mom raised seven kids, but my dad, you know, I'm his only child. And my dad told me that he lied to me my whole life. Now, he wasn't purposely lying. My dad had total integrity. This is his belief system. But he always said that if you want to succeed in life, you got to work hard. And my father was one of the hardest working people I've ever met. And unfortunately, all that produced was a hard life. You know, how is hard work ever going to produce an easy life? That didn't make any sense. It's like planting tomato seeds and thinking corn's going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you look at the most successful people on the planet, now, by the way, that's not the people with the most amount of money. They might have a lot of money, but that's not the criteria for success. I'm talking about having a holistically successful life, who are really enjoying it and spending time with their family and watching their kids grow and being a part of it and being there for the special moments, not being at work. And those people, if you notice, they're not actually working that hard. And the people who are working the hardest, well, they don't have the great lives. So, you know, the proof's kind of just in the examples of life. And it goes back to find a way to enjoy what you're doing and be passionate about it. But also for me, Keith, what I do is, you know, I have a certain amount of time that I'll work all day, you know, because I love life. And when my kids are, I drive my kids to school every day and my wife picks them up, and we kind of wrestle over who gets to do it because we love doing it. and not, oh, you do it, or, you know, we love doing it. And when my kids say, hey, Dad, can you spend some time with me and play with me? I put down stuff to go be with them because that time's very limited. Work will always be there, by the way.
Yeah.
And so because I have a limited amount of time to get the work done, it actually makes me more efficient and more effective because I have to get it done in that amount of time. But if you just keep working, well, you'll notice that even 24 hours a day is not enough time. So you got to learn how to be more efficient and more effective in how you do that. And if you work on that, but also whatever you do, love it and enjoy it and be passionate about it, you'll see that you're way more successful because the brain, it makes a neural connection between what you're doing and what you're experiencing as far as your emotion goes. And when it feels great all the time, it actually produces bigger and bigger results easier and easier because the brain goes, well, if this is going to bring me pleasure, I'm going to figure out a way how to do this. But if you keep equating this to pain and hard work and drudgery, you're only going to get less and less results because the brain equates it to being painful and it actually avoids trying to go down that path. It's a defense mechanism.
As we start to wrap up, I want to ask you about your retreat. So you, I think you've got one coming up in Australia and you have these retreats where people spend a few days with you. And I've seen videos and one of the things you get people to do is to walk on red hot coals. Why?
That's right. Well, you know, Keith, actually, this is not an official record in the Guinness book, but it did make CNN and everywhere else. I have actually done the longest fire walk in history, which is 266 feet
Wow.
or 81 meters. And I did that in 1998. Nobody has actually topped that. I don't really care if they do. That wasn't about breaking a record. It was just showing people that whatever you set your mind to, you can do. And the longest one is just about holding your focus longer. Because in life we have so much input and people get distracted and the email goes off and Facebook and I got to go to that right away. Your phone rings and somehow the person at the other end knows if you're going to answer it or not. You know, that's ridiculous. And so the firewalk is just a metaphor for what you think is impossible isn't. You know, but once you cross those coals and you're not damaged and you're not, there's no pain and there's no injury, instantly you have a new question. Like you're thinking, man, if I could do that I thought was impossible, what else have I been telling myself is impossible that's been holding me back from everything I want to achieve in life? And it's really about taking that first step towards your goals and dreams, because once you take that first step, you'll realize, and it wasn't as scary as I thought, or wasn't as hard as I thought, so let's take the next one, the next one. You start creating momentum, and guess what? Your goals are achieved. Well, the firewalk's the same thing. Is once you put that foot on the searing hot coals, I promise you, you'll take a second, third, and fourth step, because I've never seen anybody stand there thinking, should I go on or not?
Right.
But I've taken six-year-old kids firewalking.
Wow.
I've taken paraplegics on their hands where we hold them like a wheelbarrow and they go across on their hands. I've taken pregnant women, blind people from all walks of life, and thousands, tens of thousands of people firewalking safely. And what you profoundly see happen in their life is crazy, because for the rest of their life, they have a reference that if I can do this, I can do anything. And so, yes, we have a retreat coming up in which we'll take people at the retreat. Now, nobody has to firewalk. It's not a prerequisite. But, you know, people go, you know what? I'm scared. I can feel the heat as I'm standing here getting ready to walk, but you know, I know Keurig would never hurt me, and I'm going to trust in myself, and they get on the other side. But, man, what you see happen on the other side of the coals is profound, and it's mind-blowing. I think I have the best job in the world, Keith, is I get to see people fulfill their dreams.
That's amazing. So you've shared so much insight and wisdom with us today, but I want to try and squeeze a little more out of you, if that's okay.
Sure.
The podcast is my instruction manual. And so I want to ask you five questions to uncover your own personal instruction manual, the Keurig Ashley recipe for success. So first, what are the good habits you try to follow every day to make sure that you are happy and healthy?
That is a great question, Keith. It's because it is important that you have make it habit.
Yeah.
When it's habit, it just becomes automatic. Is I get up every morning and the first thing I do is I read my goals. I have a few affirmations that I read, and that is because, you know, you wake up every morning and imagine if you have a tank in your system or a bucket, and every morning you wake up, the bucket's empty. Well, if you walk out into the world every day and that bucket's empty, don't be surprised if people throw garbage in your bucket. And you'll feel that way. So instead, I fill my bucket up with greatness. I prepare myself for the day, and I set the page right then. And so I read my goals. I read my affirmations. I have what I call my I am statements, my identity statements, which is, you know, I am worthy of all my goals and dreams. I am grateful. I am peaceful, calm, and centered. I am a success. All those things. I read those things. Also, I have five questions that I read every day. One of them is what am I grateful for? One of them is what do I love more about my wife today than I did yesterday? And what do I love more about my kids today? Because when you ask those questions, it's going to divert your focus towards what you love, what you're grateful for. And again, those things make you feel great. And so I fill up my tank first thing in the morning. And then I do stretching and exercise and meditation. And that sets the tone for my whole day.
That's great. Well, we've talked about How Would Love Respond, but I want to ask you, other than your own book, if you could recommend one personal development book, what would it be?
Sure. And the great thing about this book for people is you can actually get it for free because it's out of copyright now, and it was written in 1907. It's by a masterful writer named Wallace D. Wattles. It's called The Science of Getting Rich. And people hear the title like, oh, it's a money-making book. Well, actually, it's the science of getting enriched, but nobody really wants a, you know, personal development book in those days. So you put money in a title and it became a bestseller. Yet when you read The Science of Getting Rich, by the way, it's a very small book. It's a very easy read. This gentleman has it specific, exact to the letter, through it. I've read the book probably 200 times. Every time I read it, I highlight more. I write notes in the margin. My book is more highlighting than there is actual text in the book. But it's a game changer. And don't read it once and just, you know, get some of the information. Master what's in there because it will change your life. Because as I always say, Keith, there's actually only one formula for success. It's the same formula for anything you want to achieve in life. So health and fitness, relationships, money making, whatever that is, business. It's just how you apply those, that formula. And the formula is specific and it's exact in that book.
You talked about some of the mantras that you tell yourself every day. Do you have a favorite personal mantra or inspirational quote that you want to share with us?
Yes, actually, I call, it's a little wordy, but if you want, I can, you know, figure out a way to send it to you, Keith, and you can send it out to your people on the podcast.
I can put it in the show notes.
Great. It's called The Winner's Creed, and it came from, Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. And Napoleon Hill had some things that were a bit incorrect, and I'm not insulting the man, is that he said things like, I want to be, and I will be, and those are actually poor thoughts. I am is the wealthy thought. So I made some adjustments to it. I added my own couple stanzas to it, and it's called The Winner's Creed.
Kirk, what is your one guilty pleasure?
My one guilty pleasure is that, you know, I'm not really a coffee drinker and never have been. It's just that one of my clients here in Australia is an organic store, and I've taken them from struggling for 23 years to now doing $22 million a year. And because of that, they got me tasting some of their organic coffee that they have there. And so now every morning I have a cup of coffee, but I enjoy it and I make it a great cup of coffee. And that's probably one of my guilty pleasures. But all the rest of the day, I don't drink coffee. I'm not really a coffee drinker, but it's my one guilty pleasure that I enjoy every morning. And we have a beautiful farm with amazing views here on the Sunshine Coast of Australia, just north of Brisbane. And so I sit out on a deck with my stunning, amazing wife and look out over the property and everything. And I you know, fill my heart with gratitude and look at how my life is blessed. And I enjoy my coffee that way.
Beautiful. So final question in terms of your recipe for success. None of us live forever. So when your time comes, how do you want to be remembered?
Well, Keith, as I certainly don't want to be remembered with a gravestone or anything like that, because I don't need somebody come to see a plot of dirt where I am. I actually told my wife that when I'm passing, is like if I have Alzheimer's or anything, just lock the gate to the farm, let me wander around, and wherever I die, just throw some dirt on me. But how I want to be remembered is that I lived. Is that, you know, the container that I'm running around with, that it was spent, that there was nothing left of it, that I got every ounce of everything out of it. I played the game full out. I faced my fears, and I lived. I played the game however I could, and that I tried to be inspirational to everybody that I come in contact with, not by what I teach or by what I say, but how I lived.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today. Where can people follow and connect with you?
Thanks, Keith. Well, you know, KurekAshley.com, KurekAshley.com. I will tell you, Keith, that there's a great free 10-day program on there. It's called Get Out of Your Bad Mood, and it's really about how do you manage how you think and feel, because that's the most important distinction between successful people and unsuccessful people. It's a real 10-day course. It's not about selling you anything.
Okay.
You can get that on there. And there's videos and blog videos and all kinds of things. And the website's really about helping people make transformation in their life. And you can also order How Would Love Respond off of there.
Kirk, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Keith. And you're an amazing guy. And I'm really honored to be interviewed by you. And if there's anything I can ever do for you again, feel free to ask.
Thanks so much. Still to come, what does compassion have to do with fitness? I would love to hear from you. You can reach me at keith@myinstructionmanual.com and listen through to the end of the podcast to learn how to get a free copy of one of my books. Instead of a co-host, I have some amazing regular contributors on topics like mindfulness and nutrition. I'm thrilled now to introduce Kathleen Trotter, who will be our regular contributor on fitness. Kathleen is a personal trainer and author of Finding Your Fit, a compassionate trainer's guide to making fitness a lifelong habit. She has a master's degree in exercise science and writes for the Huffington Post and the Globe and Mail. Kathleen, welcome to my instruction manual.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Kathleen, we're going to be talking regularly over the next few weeks, so I wanted to take this first week to get to know you and your fitness philosophy. So first, your day job is as a personal trainer. What does that mean? What does a work day look like for you?
You know, I like the tagline I put, the personal in personal training. I just help individuals find their fit, which is why I loved writing the book, because that's my passion. Becoming more energized and empowered with being active, you know. I used to be this unhealthy kid, and, you know, I ate my way through my parents' divorce, and yeah, I was overweight, but more importantly, I was unhappy. I sort of hunched over, you know, I was miserable in my own skin. So if I can help one client or one reader just feel more powerful, then that's what gives me joy in my life.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you as part of this podcast is that when I sort of looked at some other fitness experts who are out there doing a lot of media, they don't have the same sort of compassionate approach that you have. You built the word compassionate right into the name of your book.
I love that you saw that. Thank you. That makes you're my best friend right there. That's my favorite part of the title.
So, well, then let me ask you about the compassionate and how you would describe your fitness philosophy.
Well, the compassion is really key, because most people read the name of my book and they're like, I don't need more compassion, Kathleen. I'm already like too nice to myself. What I need is more discipline. And what I say is that's the wrong way to connect it to, because compassion doesn't mean letting yourself off the hook. In fact, far from it. Compassion means having enough respect for yourself and enough love for yourself to make yourself follow through on your fitness goals. It means holding yourself accountable, but it means holding yourself accountable in a productive and growth-oriented way. So many of us with fitness, we shame spiral. So it's like, oh, I missed one workout. Oh, I'm a terrible human being. I might as well miss another one. I had one cookie. Oh, I might as well have five. And that's just giving into negative brain propaganda that just allows you to go down that shame rabbit hole. And then you feel crappy about yourself. And then why would you want to work out, right? Why would you want to do something good for yourself? So my philosophy is that being healthy and making healthy choices is about loving yourself. It's not about hating yourself. And it's about becoming, you know, the most energized and empowered version of you that you can be. And I have such a bugaboo with all those articles out there. They're like, be a whole new you in these, you know, in 2 weeks from now. And I'm like, I don't want anybody to be a whole new them. I just want you to be a version of you that's fitter, happier, healthier, more active. But I want it to be a version of you, not somebody else, right? You got to honor and love who you are. And sort of harness the best parts of your personality and go from there.
Kathleen, you mentioned eating your way through your parents' divorce. How did you get from a place where you were an unhealthy teenager to someone now who is living your life focused on fitness?
Well, the main thing is that it's a process. So, you know, I say to everybody, I think one of the problems is that people look at healthy, fit people like trainers and they're like, oh, they have it all figured out. They just sort of found motivation on the side of the road. It's easy for them. And, you know, I say to everybody, it's so not easy. It's a wonderful journey. It's a worthwhile journey, but it is a journey. And I've sort of learned every step of the way. What started the journey was really my mom. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And she just sort of said to me, you know, you can't be inactive. And she got the fact that I hated gym class. You know, I would make every single excuse to get out of gym class. I was sick. I was tired. I would cry. And so eventually she sort of said, okay, I get that you don't want to be active with your peers. And I get that you're embarrassed of your body. But you can't just sit there. So we have to find a solution. And one of her taglines that she always said to me as a kid that I've really adopted with all my clients is, it's about finding solutions, not excuses. So for me, one of the things that was keeping me from being active was that I really was uncomfortable with people my own age. So what my mom said was, okay, moving is a non-negotiable. We have to get you moving. But maybe the solution is you join the Y. Because the Y, we were living in Stratford, Ontario at the time. And it was primarily the demographic of the Y was older individuals. I'm not talking about like 80, but like everyone was at least 10 to 15 years older than me. And for some reason, I was more comfortable with that age group. And I was able to just go walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes. And, you know, that kind of little win of going on the treadmill then helped me go for 15 minutes and then 20 minutes. And then I started feeling comfortable doing weights, and I started doing aerobic and step classes, and eventually the people at the Y just sort of said to me, you know, you take so many of these classes, you should be teaching them. So they taught me how to teach classes, and the Y has this great program where if you volunteer, you get taught how to be an aerobics instructor for free. So I didn't have any money at the time, but I could do it if it was free, and then it gave me volunteer hours for school, and so I did that all the way through high school, and then I was like, oh, this could be a career. So then I did kinesiology, and my undergrad, and I sort of went from there. But it all started with my mom saying, you know, we have to find a solution. It's not about finding excuses, and we have to honor who you are and your fears while still creating a more productive and healthier and happier future.
That's a great lesson, too, to those of us who are parents of teenagers. So it was great to get to know you this week.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
So where can people follow and connect with you?
My website's KathleenTrotter.com. You can always email me through the website. All my columns and videos and media stuff is all up there. On Instagram, I'm Kathleen Trotter Fitness. On Twitter, I'm K Trotter Fitness. And on Facebook, I'm just Kathleen Trotter. But I love hearing from readers, questions, comments, concerns, everything. So just contact me and I will contact you back.
Okay, talk soon.
My pleasure.
So, that's episode 2. I would love to hear what you think. You can reach me at keith@myinstructionmanual.com or on Twitter, I'm @KeithMacArthur. You can find show notes for this episode at myinstructionmanual.com. That's also where you can find more of my writing about my journey towards living a better life. And you can sign up for my email newsletter and download a copy of my 10-step happiness checklist. If you like My Instruction Manual, please subscribe, rate, and review it. It really helps other people to be able to find the podcast. I want to thank this week's guest, Keurig Ashley, and our regular contributors, Kathleen Trotter, Michelle J. Lynn, and Joelle Anderson. My Instruction Manual is created and hosted by me, Keith MacArthur. The podcast is a division of FanReads, Inc. Thanks for listening. Go make today a great day. Thanks for sticking around. Since you've listened to the end of the podcast, I want to let you know two ways you can get a free copy of one of my books. The first is to record a short audio comment that I can include in the podcast. I'd love to hear your feedback, what you like or didn't like about the podcast, or questions you want me and my guests to answer. The second involves leaving a review of the podcast. Leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or another podcast service, then send me a link or screen grab of your review along with your mailing address, and I'll send you a signed copy of one of my books. My email is keith@myinstructionmanual.com. Thanks for listening.